Hey, gang, welcome to Money Moves. I am Jill Schlesinger. He is
Mark Talercio.
We are taking the mystery out of your financial life. No jargon, no judgment. Let me start with the obvious, most important thing today, which is I know the chairs suck. Okay. Thanks for the comments. We already saw that. I'm sitting on a seat cushion right now, which you guys can see because trying to push me forward. Mark's sitting on a pillow.
I'm not sitting on a pillow. I just happen to be sitting as if there's like a brick wall behind me.
There is
not
a pillow behind
it's
you.
It's doing nothing.
Anyway, Isaac is going to be working on new chairs, but thank you for your comments. We love your feedback. It's fantastic. Meanwhile, like we said, this is a program that's trying to help you along your financial journey, wherever you may find yourself. So you may be just starting out. You may be sort of mid-career. It does not matter to us. If you've got a question, anything money-related, career, maybe a new job, maybe what to do with your retirement account, how to manage a big financial decision about housing, get in touch with us. Go to jillonmoney.com, click the Contact Us button, write us a note. For those of you listening, I also want to give you a little theater of the mind, as we like to say in the old radio world. Mark's wearing his CFP shirt. Mark and I are both CFPs. We don't practice. We don't have like a business. We're not providing financial advice for a living. It's just that it informs the way that we talk to you guys. Hey, Mark, did you ever move back home?
God, no.
Wow. Wow.
How's that for an answer?
That's a lot. You jumped on me.
I turned 18. I got in my car. I drove west. Don't ask me how or why, but I ended up in Arizona. I was there for many, many, many years. No, 18, I was out of the house, never went back.
You know, obviously, during the pandemic, we had a ton of people moving back home. But something has stuck, and I just want to bring this to your attention. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Moving back home, no longer a sign of failure. Now, failure is a tough word. I just want to point that out. I may have said something about this in a previous show, which is, you know, you literally had to be a bust out loser to move back home when I was graduating from college because there were so many jobs and rents were really affordable. Last year, 49% of adults under the age of 30 said they lived with a parent. Almost half of people. That's crazy. It is up 12 percentage points. This is according to the Federal Reserve. Nearly a third of adults were 25 or older. So I know what you're thinking because you're like, oh, no, it's just people moving home after college. It's a lot of people. So, Mark, is it now a badge of honor to be able to say, I moved back home so I could save money? We hear from people on our other show, Jill on Money, all the parents that we talk to are like, hey, my kid's living with me. And by the way, there's a pressure on the parents because they maybe didn't want that.
Yeah, I know. It's a very touchy issue. I mean, I get it. Like, if you're struggling and you need a few months to get on your feet, back on your feet, if it's 6 months, if it's a year. But, you know, I read this article and some of the quotes like, yeah, I moved back and I have no plans on moving out. I'm like, what?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really, I wonder, is this, all right, you got to write into us and tell us your experience of this. Because on some level, it may be a really wonderful thing. Like multi-generational households are great. They really are. You know, I grew up with a grandfather who was like in our house a lot. He didn't live with us, but he practically did. And we stayed in his apartment when we were working, you know, downtown. But is this a societal change that's going to stick? Or is it going to be that when housing becomes more affordable and things are resetting after the pandemic, 5 years from now, are we going to look back at that and say, that is so silly, that did not stick?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't stick. I mean, because if you're in your 30s and your mentality is I'm living with my parents and I have no plans on moving out. So what's the future? You're just going to live there for the rest of your adult life and your parents, when they pass away, you're going to inherit that house?
Yes, exactly. They're going to be so excited.
You're in your 30s, you're going to bring over your boyfriend or your girlfriend and hang out with your parents and watch a movie on Friday night? Like, what's the long-term plan?
I don't know. And I feel bad for the parents. I mean,
that's the other thing. What are the parents thinking? Like, the parents,
they're like, I launched you.
Yeah.
And how many people say to us, they're like, oh, I have three kids. Two of them are not exactly launched yet. How old are they? 28, 32. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. You know, I think if you are going to live home, I really, truly believe, and I've shifted on this, I think kids should chip in. I really do. I think it's just good habit. And even if your parents say no, you should offer. You shouldn't just go in there and be like, I'm living off you guys for however extended period of time.
I hope and pray that I do not find myself in this situation. later on.
I hope and pray that your son lives with me and takes care of
him. Fine, but I do not want him living with me when he's in his 20s.
And also, parents, as the younger generation, you may not really know whether your parents can afford this or not. In other words, like, maybe you're, what if your parents, you may not know this. This is a good thing to like pick about this. Like, say to your parents, like, were you thinking of selling the house? Is me coming home a problem? Is that going to cause any financial issues for you? I think you could ask those questions. And that at least opens, like, you're not just assuming that they owe you everything.
This is not what the parents had in mind.
No, there's no way. There's no way. Okay, next up, our jillionaire du jour is David, who joins us from New York. I know you'll never guess that he's from New York from this accent. So check this out.
Hi, Jill Marks. Make it short and sweet. I'm selling a rental property in Staten Island, New York. I live in Westchester. I'm 48, married, 2 kids. I don't know if it's a 1031 or just take the tax hit and invest the money. I'm a city worker, kind of at a crossroads here. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, Mark, let's talk a little bit about a real estate transaction here. There is a rule that the government has, and it's basically says, hey, if you've got some property and you want to sell that property, then you have to pay the gain, the capital gain. However, there is a way to push that capital gain off, meaning you sell it, but you then take the proceeds, you buy another property, and you don't have to pay any of the tax that's due. It's called a 1031 exchange. You heard David reference that. Now, here's the deal. Should David do a 1031 exchange? I'll give you my thoughts. You go first.
I mean, does this guy want to be a landlord? Does he enjoy doing this? If he does, and you know, he wants to defer these taxes and keep kicking the can down the road, so to speak, sure, fine. But if he doesn't want to be a landlord and he's just tired of this and he just wants to cash out, forget it. Just pay the capital gains, get your money, and
move on.
Move on. Okay. Be done with it.
So there's something that, like, when you have rental property, though, there are a couple of different levels of taxes that you might have to think about. So when you own rental property, which you might see this, like you see online, like, oh, you're going to be the greatest landlord in the world. You're going to make a zillion dollars from real estate. It's work, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you get this thing called depreciation, which means that basically the IRS lets you to deduct this thing, which is kind of a, it's sort of a phantom way of getting a tax benefit. So you get to do that. But when you sell the property, you have to recapture all that money and you have a big tax bill.
It's not dollar for dollar, but it's going to be a bill.
It's going to be a bill. And he lives in New York. And so it's a high tax area. But as Mark said, you're relieved of this idea of being a landlord. Right. And also, just to be clear, maybe having the money after taxes is good. So a lot of times people are like, oh, yeah, I just want to keep buying real estate. That's great. You have cash flow. Money's coming in. But you know what you don't have? The money that's sitting there in equity. So if there is a situation here where David's like, hey, you know what? I made a lot of money. Everything's good. I'll pay my taxes and move on. Great. I will say one thing. If you are going to sell any rental property, or if you're going to do a 1031 exchange, you better have a darn good accountant by your side, because I wouldn't do that on my own. Would you?
Oh, no. You got to have some sort of legal representation. But this, you know, this kind of speaks to the larger issue that you and I come across a lot, whether it's real estate or just a really good investment in the stock market. For some reason, some people, they will do anything that they possibly can to avoid paying taxes. Having a tax bill is usually a good sign.
Yes, absolutely. My dad used to say, like, don't worry about paying taxes. Worry when you don't have to pay taxes.
Exactly.
That's an issue. Okay, we got a question from Christine from California. And Mark, it is a touchy subject, no matter how much or how little you earn. It essentially boils down to this. If you're going out with friends or another couple, and one person in the couple is ordering like a salad and one glass of wine, mm-hmm. and then maybe the other ones are ordering steaks, apps, dessert,
lobster,
and drinks.
Yes.
And there's a huge disparity. The bill comes, it's $500. Now, poor Christine, her part of the bill is like $30.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, let's just split it.
No. Sorry.
Uh-uh. I say no to that. And by the way, friends, you suck if you're doing that. Because you know, when you look at a bill, that one person has ordered so much less. So, you know, if you've got a friend, especially someone who you know is like a little bit on a tighter budget, be magnanimous. Say, you know what? Why don't you just leave a part of the tip and we'll cover the bill? There has to be some awareness around this. If everybody's in the exact same place and financially it's not a big deal and it's fine, or like one time you order a salad, the other time you don't, like that's all fine. But your friends kind of know your situation. I think that really stinks if they're not being generous about that. Yeah,
if there's a disparity like that, for sure. You speak up. You're not going even, Steven. No. This happens to us. Like, we went out recently, the three of us, so our family, and then there was a friend of ours was with us. So it was basically three and then one.
Yeah.
And we got the bill. You know, we didn't do even, Steven. Like, you just pay for what you had. That's all.
Why didn't you just cover your friend? What are you, so cheap?
Yeah, I think we actually ended up doing that, which is no big deal.
Of course you did. Come on, ridiculous. I would never do that. Mark, I'm sticking you with the bill. I never let Mark pay when I'm with him, ever, ever. Never.
Once a year.
Maybe twice sometimes. Never know. Hey, gang, are you in that like weird situation? I also have heard from people who say like same thing on vacation. Like, I want to go on vacation with my friends. I'm a teacher. They're investment bankers. Like, how are we managing that? I just think people are so stupid to not recognize that disparity exists. So if you make a ton of money and you want your friend to come, don't be like cajoling and be like, oh, just don't put money in your retirement account this month. No. You know what you say? Like, let's pick a way to spend time together where we all can enjoy ourselves and go in a way that's reasonable. And if you can't do that, then you know what? You're a bad friend. It is time for the TikTok Takedown.
If you retire today with $2 million, this is how long it lasts. Pull out 6%, $120,000, and it lasts forever. Pull out 8%, $160,000 a year, basically still forever. Pull out 10%, $200,000 a year, and it only lasts 21 years. 12%, $240,000 a year, gone in 15 years. Pull 15%, $300,000 a year, gone in 10 years. Spend less than your investments earn, and your money lasts forever.
What's with the flowers?
I don't know. It's supposed to be like a visual. So if you're listening to this, this is a woman in her kitchen with a bunch of flowers, and she is pulling out a stem of those flowers. By the way, I hate those flowers so much. They're lilies. I'm so allergic to them. No one ever send me lilies. And that, you know, the stamen that stains like crazy. Yeah, so, yeah, like, yeah. That's bad. All right. So the idea around how much money your money can generate is something that we talk about all the time with investing, retirement planning, all the time. And you may have heard of something called what's called a safe withdrawal rate. And this is an old-timey kind of concept, which is how much money can I pull out of my portfolio so it lasts forever? Mark, what is the standard safe withdrawal rate that CFPs look at?
It's usually somewhere between 3% and 4%.
Okay, so let's even say 4%, because I feel like Ben has convinced me about this, our friend Ben Carlson. So that just means if you have $1 million, you can pull out 40 grand, and then it should be able to continue to grow. And the 40 grand that you'll need today, you'll need to inflate it in the future, because your 40 grand that you need today is going to be a bigger need in the future as prices rise. So what about her idea about 4%, 6%, 10%, 12%? It seems to me like she's sort of saying, like, no sweat if you want to pull out 80 grand a year out of your $1 million. What's the fly in the ointment here?
Well, I think the one thing that's not being addressed here is it all depends on how much you spend. That's like the key ingredient. If you have $3 million and you're spending 250 grand a year, it's not going to last the rest of your life. If you have $3 million and you're spending 80 grand a year, you're set for life. So it all depends on how much you spend.
But it's also, it's interesting because I think this is sort of the one of the downsides of having rules of thumb that, you know, what happens is people will say, well, wait a minute, Jill, if I have $1 million and my money is earning 10 or 11 or 12% a year, why can't I pull 80, 90 or 100 grand out? That's fine. When the market's rising.
Right, right.
What happens when you have a crap year? And then all of a sudden your $1 million portfolio is what? 800,000. Should you pull out less than in that year? So there are a lot of people who think one of the ways to kind of manage your your future needs is to think about, you can pull out a little bit more if you are in a big up year, but you would have to pull out less in a down year. And I don't think most people can do that. They don't want to live their lives that way.
Yeah, yeah. And they get used to living a certain way.
So I don't think this is terrible. I agree. I don't love the visual, but also, you know, it's not the worst that we've seen. So I give it sort of like a passing grade as like conceptually, but in reality, the application to someone's life, it's not quite there.
No, it's not the worst, but yes, it depends on the individual situation because everybody spends a different amount. It's all about how much you spend in a given year.
Absolutely. Well, gang, thank you so much for tuning in. We are so delighted every single time we talk to you. It's like, it's so fulfilling, Mark. Isn't it great?
It's the highlight of our week.
The highlight of our week is talking to you. Don't forget, you should follow us, subscribe wherever you get podcasts, promote us. Send this to every single person you know who's under the age of 45, and then send it to every single person you know who's over the age of 45. Mark and I are basically bridging the generation gap in just two episodes every single week. Get in touch with us by going to our website, jillonmoney.com. Click the Contact Us button. Check a box if you want to join us via audio or video. We'd love to have you. Again, follow and listen to us wherever you get your favorite podcast. We'll talk to you next time.